Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight. Yesterday, I was on Modern Day Debate. End of the line, Joel says, JF, good performance on Modern Day Debate. Your point about crime statistics to be taught in schools really caught the opposition. Oh, yeah, that was a good debate. If you haven't watched it and you want to watch some JF debate, go for it. Has the left gone too far? They paired me with Infrared against Ashley and Radical Coder. And oh my God, this may have been, I don't know if people realize, but because it was a subtle performance, but it may have been one of my best performances in terms of crushing the opponents. Two of my opponents, I crushed each of them very subtly, very individually, each of them in one way. And then I just shut up and I let them continue to work in their own swamp that I had created for them. So the two really big hits that I've given, well, first, of course, I did my intro statement first and they didn't address it at all. So it's a case of an absence of response. I basically say leftists don't care about sustainability. They don't care about the sustainability of their policies. They can't even think about it. And they've proven that precisely by spending the rest of the debate not talking about sustainability and evolution at all. So as far as my intro statement, it was basically untouched. And then Ashley, I caught her because she said that it's understandable that diversity of all sorts of things, race, gender, along with density in cities, creates more crime. And it's like, and I was like, okay. And then I questioned her about this. And like within 30 seconds after saying this, she says, but I think it's still important we fight for more diversity. So you're telling me that you know what you want politically creates more crime. You know there's going to be people dying from it, but you still want it. I mean, that is basic mismanagement. And after this, I basically had nothing to add for the whole show. I was considering Ashley is down. And then Radical Coder was trying to wrap his LGBT propaganda in schools into a kind of, well, it's true that LGBT people exist, so why shouldn't we teach it? And that is the left trying to take their moral agenda, moral program, and reduce it down to a matter of fact. It's like, oh no, we're just talking facts here. And I said, okay, well, we're just talking facts. I would like some of my facts about race and crime to be taught to elementary school children. What do you think about this? Boom! And he had to try sliding away from the question for a whole minute. And every time as he was starting these sentences, trying to escape the question, I was like, that's not what I asked. That's not what I asked. He was looking for a way out and he was like, well, yeah, I think we can talk about racism to elementary school teachers. I said, I'm not talking about racism. I'm talking about the fact from FBI statistics that there are certain groups in America that commit more crime. That's a fact, right? So we teach it. Well, at the end, he ended up saying, well, I'm not against teaching reality, but I don't think we should tell them that some races commit more crime. And it's like, well, you were for the facts a minute ago when you started talking about LGBT propaganda, but suddenly the facts don't matter anymore. And so you see that they're trying to disguise their moral program when it fits their view. Oh, it's a fact. But when it doesn't fit their view, well, then we don't want to talk about these facts because they have moral consequences. So in the end, I've demonstrated in full that these people are interested at entering ideas in the brains of your children. And of course, you and I, it's not a demonstration that surprises any of us. But in terms of performing in a debate and making the audience realize, look, this is what the left is. They're trying to inject stuff into your children's brain, and they're deceiving themselves about whether this stuff is sustainable and fair and factual. And so as far as I'm concerned, I performed extremely well. And for a red, very good performance also. I was wondering what would happen because we had a debate, him and I, and he's a communist. But as it turns out, he's one of those based Muslim communists who is against the attack of the state on the social on social conservatism, if you will. So basically, that is perfect. I mean, he's still wrong on the economic side, but since the debate was so much about the culture, that was a totally good debate partner for me to have. And I pulled a graph yesterday in the debate, and I don't remember if I talked about it here on the show. So I wanted to bring it. That's my calculations from that I've done from the Twitter statistics. This is the history of my Twitter account since 2016. Of course, I had started my Twitter account 6 years before in 2010, but it had remained a relatively small Twitter account. And I just wanted to show you the effect of censorship. Those are impressions, millions of impressions. So in 2016, 2017, I'm slowly becoming a YouTuber, generating these small YouTube videos. And then the KrautNT stuff starts, and the Warski Live era starts around here, I believe. And so you can see that I rise from 500,000 maximum per month to 4 million per month. Now, it's always natural to have a drop after a peak, and then I maintain myself, and in fact, in a growing position. For 2019, 2020, just a little bigger, 2021, just a little bigger. And then at the end of 2021, Parag Agrawal becomes CEO, and within 2 months, I am banned. So we fall to zero impression on Twitter. Elon Musk comes in with a sink, and 2-3 months later, I am unbanned, and the line of growth is basically totally in line with what would have happened if I hadn't been banned. So that is a beautiful illustration that of the artificiality of what the leftists have done with the public space. My account was still up. It still had its followers. All they did is a manual ban, and you don't exist anymore. And it was sufficient for Elon to just unban me, and the machine restarted. It's like a... It's like this year of my life doesn't exist for people, and it's like everything is repaired now. And this confirms to me that there's no secret shadow banning remaining on my account. Now, there's a lot of people complaining that their unbanning is not full, that they still experience some effects of shadow banning. That's possible. But for me, I think the ban was very pointy. And I think that the unban was very clean also. But still, I want to talk about Elon's lie today. And we're gonna check a couple of things before we get there. But Elon's lie is that in response to Brett Weinstein, he tells an incomplete reality where there's clearly something missing in his tweet. He's trying to deceive us into, oh, it's one of those lies of, you know, when you say that the technical truth, but the technical truth is so distant from what is being discussed that it's basically a lie to not be responding to all the other stuff. That's what Elon Musk pulled in response to the Substack critique, because Elon is making all sorts of explanations to Brett Weinstein to a tweet. And he's saying Matt Taibbi is an employee of Substack. He's saying Substack has been downloading our database, so their IP is untrusted. But the thing is, if this whole banning of Substack link on Twitter in the form of no retweet, no quote, just quote, no reply, no retweet, no likes, if that was due to an IP ban, that would be something that would have affected only the servers of Substack, only the principal CEO of Substack, but it wouldn't have affected me when I when I copy paste a Substack link in my Twitter. So clearly this wasn't IP related. This was an intentional hit on a competitive entity. And I'm suspecting that the reason Elon has to lie is that basically he's been acting illegally. He's been trying to create a monopolistic control against a competitor. We'll see what he said exactly. But before Steve Saylor says, it took 53 weeks after Elon Musk declared his bid for Twitter and apparently the throttling of my account to be cut back for my number of followers to double from 40,000 after 2 years on Twitter to 80,000 after 13 years. So those are examples that Twitter has been largely fixed. Not for everyone yet, and there's also very unjust unbannings that have happened based on political motivations in Europe. But for those who have been lucky, there's a full fix. I hope that the work continues to undermine what's remaining in terms of oppression of speech. Someone was saying on Twitter, we still don't know what was in the trans activist shooter's manifesto, but we know what historical artifacts Harlan Crow has in his house, not by accident. That is in reference to the fact that a ridiculous article came out claiming that the guy who gave these trips to Clarence Thomas is a collector of Hitler memorabilia, including a copy of Mein Kampf, signed by hand by Hitler himself. And so it's like, not only is Clarence Thomas corrupted, he's corrupted by secret Nazis, billionaires. And it is quite, when you do the contrast, why do we know this? Which has nothing to do, you know, it doesn't inform me of anything. Doesn't inform me on the state of Clarence Thomas, on whether Clarence Thomas is a competent justice. It literally tells me nothing. This guy could be a huge leftist billionaire who just happens to like history of World War II. So it tells me nothing. But what's in the shooter, the trans shooter manifesto, that would be extremely informative. And yet, we know that we have this data, but we're not getting it. So you can see the double standard of the regime here. They would totally have released this manifesto if it was a anti-minority, white-written manifesto, but written by a white cisgender, like you know, the incel shooter. I forget his name, but this kind of people, we always get their manifesto, we get their videos. Here, we cannot get insight into an event that led to 6 people dying. That is scandalous. And Musk, not Elon Musk, but a guy named Muscovy was answering, we know what is in the shooter's manifesto, specifically because they won't release it. The manifesto was obviously based on typical mainstream leftist rhetoric about trans issues, which is why LGBT groups pressured the police not to release it. Absolutely, that is a fine reading. We got the manifestos of every possible colors of hate. We even got the manifestos from black shooters, black terrorists who were pissed against blacks and they hated blacks themselves. I've been reviewing these manifestos again and again on the show. But this one, we don't have it and we may never have it. Because if there was a justice process, a prosecution, perhaps they would be obligated to make it public at some point to enter it in evidence. But if there's no justice process, honestly, I think the best thing that could happen to help transparency in this case, there would have to be someone who starts a lawsuit. Perhaps parents starting a lawsuit against the police perhaps, you know, victim groups or even anti-Second Amendment people, if someone was to want to get it, they could start a lawsuit and they could ask that the manifesto be revealed as part of discovery. If that doesn't happen because the shooter is dead, we may never get the manifesto. Silver Spider says, the shooter was a real woman, but I guess it wasn't a real manifesto. Freedom of Information Act. I don't know if... I don't think that an ongoing investigation on which there is not a prosecutorial end, I don't know that it is subject to Freedom of Information Act. I'd be very surprised, because that would mean that basically someone who's a criminal can know what the police knows about him. That would be very surprising. Elon Musk was asking, because someone said that George Soros has donated more than $32 billion to various causes. Elon Musk was saying he must really want it to pay so much. But what does he want? Well, I explained to Elon, and someone even sent my old episode of Understanding Soros, which I've done with the book that, of Soros that Mama JF gave me on my birthday, I think, or on Christmas. She gave me a book by Soros, and I read it in full. And basically, Soros wants America to be as vassalized as Europe. Soros considers that he has successfully bound Europe to control by elites under his care, and that he's able to play with Europe in whatever way he wants. And he thinks that he can make particular amounts of profits when he succeeds at causing shifts of circumstances. When the whole world changes, you know, when a massive event comes and changes the game, Soros thinks that those are the big ways of making money. So he believes that the problem with America is that it is self-directed. It is driven by a form of decentralized liberty, the kind of American spirit. And that although America is very much, in my view, under control of leftists, it's not enough for George Soros. He would want more. He would want America to be totally predictable by him, the way Europe is totally predictable by him. There is a problem, which is that Europe has been vassalized to America. It's not clear that Soros can get what he wants for a durable period, because who will America be vassalized to? It would be vassalized to private interest and ethnocentric interest. Now, whether that can sustain at all, whether in the intergenerational times it can last and people won't revolt against it, that is to be questioned. But that would accomplish basically the Philip Fabry view of realizing America as the falling Roman Empire. If George Soros was to get what he wants, basically from our perspective, the way we would experience it is by an increasingly totalitarian American government, which he may get for a long time. He may be successful at this, and eventually a crumbling of the empire and the strength of America and a replacement by something else. If an AI becomes dangerous, the most likely cause would be programming that emphasizes avoidance of suffering as a moral foundation. Unfortunately, this error is very likely to occur. The suffering reducer would be a true monster. Even humans who get into this stuff generally gravitate towards non-existence as a remedy for suffering. Always want to prevent new life to sterilize in different ways. Bravo, bravo, good sir, you got it. Adam Van Buskirk, you are right on target. This is exactly what AI will conclude. This is exactly what I warned Sam Harris about years ago, before I was even a YouTuber. Look. If you try to maximize human happiness and versus human suffering, there's going to be some people who will be chosen away from existence. That is the question underlying abortion. That is why it's such a tough debate for many people. The AI that is told you have to maximize human happiness, there's going to be a bunch of people at the bottom of the happiness curve that to the AI are worth killing by any means necessary. That is just the mathematics of it. I mean, let's say you've improved society positively as much as you could. Well, then what? There's still these people draining the average happiness down. There's still these fucking depressive people. What are we going to do about them? Well, the AI will find ways. The AI always finds a way. Big Tech Exodus says, is there any argument for why existence is preferable to non-existence? I mean, the argument is circular, which for some people they will say, oh, circular argument debunked. But I don't think that a circular argument is necessarily wrong. I think that there's an error in people who, as soon as they see circularity, they see wrongness, because mathematics is circular. The Euclidean axioms are circular with the propositions, and you could have the propositions and you could recover the axioms, or you can have the axioms and you can recover the propositions. So knowledge, because it is coherence, coherence is bilateral. You can go one way or the other. So to me, circularity is not a demonstration of falsehood. The only cases in which circularity is correctly labeled as a fallacy is when the circularity creates a local environment of knowledge that is irrelevant, not connecting to the space of knowledge you claim it is connecting. So, for example, the circularity of all ponies are purple in purple pony land. That's a circular statement. Why should we criticize the circularity of that statement? It's because the circularity doesn't connect in our universe. I don't see purple pony land. I don't see purple ponies either. I don't have any idea where purple pony land or where it could be or whether it is at all. So the statement is not only circular, but isolated in a space of fictitious truths that are self-referential. That is a problem of circularity. So is there an argument for why existence is preferable to non-existence? My argument goes as follows. There are many people who have argued that non-existence was the way to go. But these people don't exist anymore, and so you don't have to worry about being confronted with an argument for non-existence. If they still exist, then they are hypocrites. So if you argue for non-existence, you are part of the non-existing entities, or you are a hypocrite. That is the best I can do for, and I acknowledge that choosing existence is kind of an arbitrary preference, but it's the only arbitrary preference that things that exist can have, because you are on your way to not exist if you don't have that preference. SFSU responds to alleged assault on Riley Gaines by praising the protesters. So this is the woman who got beaten by a trans woman or a biological male in the swimming woman's category. And SFSU, the university behind the whole, it was hosting the event, they have sent a letter congratulating the protesters. Here is the statement. Thank you to our students who participated peacefully in Thursday evening's event. It took tremendous bravery to stand in a challenging space. I am proud of the moments where we listened and asked insightful questions. I am also proud of the moment when our students demonstrated the value of free speech and the right to protest peacefully. These issues do not go away, and these values are very much at our core. This feels difficult because it is difficult. As you reflect, process, and begin to heal, please remember that there are people, resources, and services available. Holy shit. These people are always recommending resources, and it's like the next generation that has been cradled in this environment, they're going to need to heal on an everyday basis. They're going to be constantly injured. Blah says, everything is purple. The things that aren't are mutated. We see the pony as it truly is, as purple, which everything is. I don't know what you're talking about, bro. But that is funny. Arnold Schwarzenegger is asking for, is apologizing for his screw your freedom comment. Years after screw your freedom statement, Arnold Schwarzenegger issues public apology. I'm sorry for saying those words. And I said, this and Terminator Dark Fate, there's no forgiving possible. That's a tweet that was done by Arnold 3 days ago. You know, someone come, you know, credit to him because someone comes to him on Twitter and says, what about these, you know, I would like to buy your merch and everything, but what about these comments you've done on Screw Your Freedom? And credit to him rather than ignoring this critique to take the apology route. Now, of course, people on the chat are saying apology not accepted. Yeah, I lose respect for people like this and I don't gain it back. But credit to him for standing, because there are people who will just ignore critique. He apologized for being wrong, and that is commendable. If you would like to support the show, use the dollar button under the Odyssey chat. Odyssey super chats are my favorite way to receive support for the show. Alternatively, feel free to use Entropy. The link to Entropy is in the description below. Also, if you'd like to send a Odyssey super chat, make sure you add a payment method to your Odyssey account. So let's talk about Elon's lie. FedSpeak says, Substack links were never blocked. Laughing my ass off. It's not even gaslighting. It's just straight up lying in plain sight at this point. So in response to Brett Weinstein, who was saying, hey, Elon, what about this Substack thing? Those of us on the left who have supported your move have been getting a lot of flack for this, you know, and now you're kind of betraying our appeal for a free middle. Always, you know, with Brett Weinstein, the centrism, the levels of centrism that shouldn't be possible. But anyway, so Elon answers to this tweet. He says, one, Substack links were never blocked. Matt's statement is false. Substack was trying to download a massive portion of the Twitter database to bootstrap their Twitter clone, so their IP address is obviously untrusted. 3, turns out Matt is/was an employee of Substack. So that is the number one, okay? Substack links were never blocked. Matt's statement is false. That is one of those truths that is technical truths. Let's go check out the original Matt Taibbi statement. So, of all things, I learned earlier today that Substack links were being blocked on this platform. So, blocked on this platform. They're not being blocked out of this platform. When there was a link that you would see, when you browse to a tweet with a Substack link, you could still click on it and you would be let outside of the platform. But I think that Mataibi's statement is fair. They were blocked on this platform because what was blocked is the replying to these links, the retweeting of these links, and the liking of these links. As far as I'm concerned, that's these links being blocked on this platform. The links out were not blocked. You could still click on it, but you had to search it for it really hard, to the point of close impossibility. So, you know, Elon is making a statement that I suspect he knows is false. He knows as a technical truth hidden inside of it to make it justifiable. But I think that he must know that they were blocked. They were blocked in terms of liking them. The link itself wasn't blocked to go to it, but the promotion of the link was blocked on Twitter, on the spread within Twitter. So Matt's statement is false. I would say Elon is lying here and misleading. Now, Substack was trying to download a massive portion of the Twitter database to bootstrap their Twitter clone, so their IP address is obviously untrusted. Also a very misleading statement, because this IP untrusting cannot possibly explain why the symptoms we have seen would happen. A IP block would be something like, okay, well, their API access is revoked. Perhaps they couldn't log in their account. Perhaps all people who are employees of Substack or related to Substack would have the impossibility of tweeting or accessing their accounts. But certainly, an IP block of some kind being untrusted wouldn't keep me from tweeting a Substack link. And that's what happened. We were all kept from interacting with tweets that had Substack links. And Substack is actually denying this. They say they have been using the Twitter API forever, that they are constantly using it to monitor data, to help authors, you know, meme and everything. They basically work a lot with trends data on Twitter, and that there was nothing special they were doing around notes that required a vast downloading of the Twitter database. Whether you believe Substack on this or not, I'm neutral. I don't really care. Anyways, by the way, Getter is doing much more than Substack would have done if they have done some of it at all. Getter is copying your entire following data so that when people leave Twitter for Getter, they can automatically follow back the VIPs that they were following on Twitter. So you can import your Twitter account. That had led to a lot of people laughing, and Joe Rogan even complaining about this, because there was something deceptive at the beginning of Getter, where they would say you have 4.8 million followers, but you don't really have this. There weren't even 4.8 million people on Getter. And so, yes, if Elon Musk is really worried about massive downloading, definitely Getter is doing more than Substack. And turns out Matt is an employee. This is denied by both Matt and Substack. They deny it in a way where I'm not certain for sure. Maybe they're playing on the is/was, and they're saying right now Matt is not an employee. Maybe he was. I don't know. I'm not convinced by any statements on any side here. But in any case, Matt is saying that right now, the salary that he's receiving from Substack is nothing else than the subscriber's contribution. Basically, he is just a Substack creator, not a Substack employee. Interesting claims on both sides. Some people, people were laughing their ass off, because when Elon answered to Brett, Brett answered, "Got it, please DM so we can take this private." And a lot of people were mocking this. They were saying, "Oh yeah, Elon, DM me too. I have something very, very important to tell you." And it made me think about, you know, this whole moment where, okay, you're trying to get in her DMs. And Stephen Robinson and someone asked him, why should this conversation be private? And Brett Weinstein answered, because you want diplomacy to increase the chances of a good outcome, and public conversation constrains all actors, reducing the chance. It made me think a lot about my plagiarism interaction with Brett Weinstein. He still hasn't answered to the second video. I am bound to find that my second video is correct. In fact, the only answer he gave me was, well, some of your statements are inaccurate. And I made the point that day, back in the days, I made the point on this show that if I accuse you of raping the woman with the blue dress, and you tell me, well, Jeff, your statement is inaccurate, I'm going to assume that the statement is inaccurate because the lady didn't have a blue dress, but you did rape her. And so, you know, having Brett without any sort of support come to me and say, you're making non-accurate statements. Okay, maybe the lady had a red dress. But my statement that you've committed plagiarism is true. Anyways, made me think about all this because I didn't communicate with Brett privately when I did this. I chose to go public because I think the test of the public crucible, the test of how is he going to react, gives information to you guys, the audience on the internet, that I shouldn't be the monopolistic haver of it. I believe you guys are entitled to both show plagiarism researcher that may get things wrong sometime, but also plagiarism researcher when they get things right, and e-celebs who fail at addressing it honorably. So I believe the public has the right to know. I believe in transparency. So Stephen Robinson was asking, what do I think about Brett's statement about private resolutions? I answered, yes, I've seen it. I personally disagree. I believe transparency is to be deontologically pursued as axiomatic before any definition of good comes into a moral system. Else we let people have their private position on what's good for themselves without public scrutiny. For instance, here Elon is trying to get away with a lie, a public lie, a lie which will be maintained due to private exchanges, cigar lounge style, a lie to which Brett finds himself participating if he resolves these matters privately without further corrections. The lie of Elon, if you are interacting with Elon and trying to fix things and Elon comes to you in DM and says, oh yeah, you know, we did block the Substack link, but I can't quite talk about it because that would be a violation of monopoly law in the US that might expose me to antitrust lawsuits. Here, how about I stop blocking them and you invite me on your podcast and we'll talk about it, but don't bring up the cartel stuff. Don't bring up the antitrust stuff. Suddenly, and suppose that this happens. Seems like, oh, Brett got his resolution. Brett Weinstein got his resolution. Substack links are not blocked anymore. But here's the problem. You've been deprived of the truth. There's a lie standing out there on the public space. There's a liar directing your social media, and you don't know it. Because everyone forgets. Everyone forgets that. Yeah, you know, Elon tweeted this. And that is evidently, if you don't want to call it a lie because you want to go technical, I mean, lie by omission certainly would qualify here. But if you want to say misleading, extremely misleading statement, that is an extremely misleading statement that cannot come from any other mind than a mind with some form of guilt that they are trying to hide. and this whole cigar lounge culture of the media where, oh, we're going to deal with it privately. And, oh, yeah, you do this for me, I do this for you. That is exactly what has crippled our academia, our media, our financial systems, our politics. And I don't want any of it. That's what I think, Stephen Robinson. Someone was answering, well, Chris Best actually is the guy from Substack. He said, none of this is true. Great Ape says, wow, JF doesn't read his chat anymore. I can't believe it. Well, I read it, you're too, okay. Your two last comments were, JF, I have asked a very important question. JF, are you too scared to even entertain this biological question? Bro, while you asked that question, I was paying attention to my story that I wanted to deliver. Now I'm ready to answer your question, but it's gone so far up in the chat that you're right, I didn't read that question. But I did saw your annoying attempts at getting me back to it. And now I have time and now I can go back to it. So he says, let's say that the children are fed a diet primarily of rice and the white kids are taller and have higher IQs. There would be no way to determine that a diet primarily of corn would not lead to taller and higher IQ blacks. Perhaps whites are more allergic to corn. That is a complex question. I'm not sure exactly what... I'm going to try to check if there were preceding... there were preceding chats about it. He says, I came to this conclusion by imagining an experiment where you cloned 1 million women and you had half of this woman have a random sampling of black babies and the other half have a have a random sampling of white babies. You then take these babies from the mother and put them in a lab where they are raised by a robot that is incapable of any bias, even in this extremely controlled environment, where certainly any differences that emerged between the population group would necessarily be genetic in nature. You could not, from this experience, determine that there are no environments where the performance differences would be different. Let's say that the children are fed a diet primarily of rice, and the white kids are taller and have higher IQs. There would be no way to determine that a diet primarily of corn would not lead to taller and higher IQ blacks. Perhaps whites are more allergic to corn. Okay, now I understand the whole setup. Great Ape, those are correct. This is correct thinking that you do there. When we say that genes cause something, we don't say there aren't any possible worlds in which they lead to a different outcomes. In fact, it's almost certain that there are theoretical possible worlds in which the outcome is different. I mean, let's take since you seem to be into per theoretical examples with perfect principled approach, I claim that any human can be potentially in principle taken to any level of IQ. I mean, go at it from a microsurgery perspective. What if you could change all of the neurons and reconnect them however you like? What if you could copy the exact 3D structure of the brain of a high IQ person into other people's brain? What if you could change each molecule so that their brain exactly reproduces the brain of a high intelligence person? So when we say genes cause IQ, we never mean, and I've never meant, and I've always been very clear about this. I've even said in my debate against Vaush, I said, if you want to start your own little aquarium in which you farm humans try to see if you can get them higher IQ. Go ahead. I just don't want to be part of the experiment. And I've always said here on this show, it's not because you could in principle farm humans that way that it would be moral to do so and that you would want to do so and that it would be economically viable and sustainable and politically sustainable to do so. Because let's be clear about what we're talking about. Suppose you have a gene that makes you poor. Suppose that being poor leads you to be more likely to have lead in your walls. Suppose that having lead in your walls reduces the IQ of your children. That is a genetic effect on IQ. The gene made you poor. The poorness made you have lead paint. And the lead paint led to a reduction in intelligence of your children. That's a genetic effect. Now, is there a possible way in which we force people out of apartments that have lead paint? Maybe. In that scenario, let me tell you that the greatest difficulty you're going to be facing is that people don't want to be pulled by force from their lead paint apartments. How you're going to resolve this in any case? And anyways, you're going to be faced with people who can't afford the non-lead paint apartment because there's a cost to this white lifestyle of non-lead paint. It means investing a little more on the paint. And of course, the paint here stands as a stand-in for many things in your life you can afford, and it does lead to higher IQ for your children. But that's because you can afford it. And imposing it on someone else is actually genocidal. Because here's the thing. If you take a family out of a lead paint apartment, you have two choices. Either you are paying for a non-lead paint apartment for them, in which case you are being genocided because some of your money is, instead of going to your own children, is now going to save someone from their own lead paint condition. Or you force them to only buy apartments that have no lead paint, in which case they can't afford it. And because they can't afford it, or if you force them to afford it, then they have no money left to care for babies. So you're either genociding the population in the lead paint apartment, or you're genociding your wealthy population that's paying for the replacement. That is the big problem. And even if you were to transfer them to state-funded apartments with no lead paint, you've just created evolutionary dependence. And now you have an entire population that couldn't breed on their own, couldn't find the resources to sustain a family, but now they can because of you. And now you're farming more genes of that are all more likely to stick to lead paint like a magnet. Now you eventually you find yourself literally people just licking the walls. I like lead paint. That is the problem of intervention. That is why, you know, that is why when you reach my level of black pitting, you don't want to do anything anymore. You just wanna get back into your own little world because the world sucks too much. Anything you want to fix, you're making worse. So yeah, you're right. You know, it's not this whole idea that believing that genes cause something is biological essentialism or genetic determinism. That's the whole fallacy that you've been working on. That leads you to believe that I'm wrong because of your hypothetical. But I'm not wrong. Your hypothetical is based on fallacious reasoning around, well, genes must determine. Genes don't determine. Genes are like a die that you throw on the table at the casino. Micronova says, so I'm tracking, JF. Genes influencing parents, categorization of priorities, safer housing versus spending resources other places, more bling, better access to cheap, unhealthy food. Exactly. And Great Ape says, I never said that you were wrong. Okay, let's go back to your statement that I took issue with. You may not have called me wrong. I took issue with your statement where you said, JF doesn't read his chat anymore, can't believe it. It's not that I'm not reading my chat. I am covering stories sometime, and if you have an important question to address, I will go back to it. If I missed it, if it flew away at the chat, politely remind me when you see that I'm at the end of my story. But I'm not even at the end of my story. I have interrupted my story to talk to you because I really don't like letting hang an accusation of that nature, sir. Chris Best, Substack guy, answered, none of this is true. One, Substack links have been obviously severely throttled on Twitter. Anyone using the product can see this. So that's a call out on the technical truth of Elon, which was wrong in all possible ways except technical. Two, we have used the Twitter API for years to help writers. We believe we're in compliance with the terms, but if they have any specific concerns, we would love to know about them. We'd be happy to address any issues. Okay, so he seems to be saying that his recent activity shouldn't differ much, but it's an unclear denial. He believes he is in compliance with the terms. Three, Matt Taibbi is not and has never been an employee of Substack. He writes a Substack and gets paid directly by his readers. That writers making money seems to be such a strange concept is telling. That's a fair denial of number three. So I would conclude based on this, Matt Taibbi is merely receiving money as a Substack creator, not as an employee. Well, that corrects the record very well. Matt Taibbi, meanwhile, has removed any references to the Twitter files in his bio. So quite impressive. But the reader's context says this tweet is false. A review of Matt Taibbi's Twitter bio using the Wayback Machine shows no past bio where the Twitter files are referenced. Nothing was removed from his bio. Ha! That's where the community notes are interesting. We get a true correction here. So people sometimes, they have a cheap way of getting a tweet with lots of likes and retweet. But it turns out that it is a misleading tweet because apparently there was no mention of Twitter files before. And meanwhile, Elon is trying to resolve this whole issue with NPR. Which was labeled state-affiliated media a couple of days ago, took issue with it, and then a whole discussion emerged around, well, is it because you receive funds from the government that you are a state-affiliated media? And so Elon seems to have wanted to resolve this issue by creating a new label. Instead of state-affiliated media, he now says government funded. So he has put this label on NPR and BBC. He has still not put it on the CBC, which CBC is literally government funded in enormous amounts in Canada. I do hope that this gets the label because that would be fair. But now, so Elon's solution has offended the BBC. So the BBC says BBC objects to government-funded media because they say, I mean, this is again absolutely deceptive. They say, well, you know, the tax, because in the UK there's the TV tax. You have a TV, you pay a tax. That's how it works. And you pay a tax that goes directly to the BBC. Now, the BBC is arguing, we're not funded by tax. We're not funded by government. We are funded by the general public who is sending us the money directly. But they're forced by the government to send you the money. They're forced by the law. So the law has made this funding arrive to you. So the law is the government. DK Shadow says, your customer objects to being taxed for something they don't even want. Well, it's fascinating. It's fascinating. I said we are attaining deep philosophical considerations around what government truly is. And it turns out it's whenever someone threatens you with kidnapping if you don't give them money. Because that's what the BBC does. It's like, oh, we're not government funded. Yeah, but the government is making it so that I have no choice but to fund you. Great Ape says, I ask you these questions, JF, because I know that you like me, that you, like me, are committed to logic and reason. It is almost a religion of people, such as ourselves. We believe first and foremost in logic, but perhaps even this belief in the power of logic is misguided, as the axioms the logic is built on could be wrong. Well, those are beautiful words, Great Ape, and I'm happy that we got all of this sorted out. In fact, it's an important question that you touch upon that should be reminded because it's constantly subject to leftist deception. They constantly bring, oh, Jeff is a biological determinist. He is a genetic determinist. And no, I'm not. Determinism is out of this question. Even when the genes play probabilistically, they still play the game of evolution. That's what you have to understand. Wholesome shitposter says, the British Broadcasting Corporation isn't even like NPR in America. In our country, the BBC can literally have you arrested if you don't pay them. They're the only debtor's prison that exists in the UK. What right do they have to oppose it? Beautifully said, that is the situation. So I don't know what will happen with this, but you know, I feel that we are cuddling and cradling our state-funded media in the West while trying to shut down the similar medias in similar arrangement in the East. Because these old labels were applied by leftists to China and Russia. And that's what they wanted. They wanted to mock Russia today. But now that it's being applied fairly to our own media, they're taking issue and we're inventing a new word to protect them. But the state media of China and of Russia are still labeled state affiliated. But, I mean, sometimes Russia today produces stuff that Putin doesn't necessarily like. There are times where Putin will order something about journalists not talking about this or that, but there are other times where they kind of challenge the power inside Russia. So it's not totally a state-controlled media. And yet we're keep... And the same thing can be said of the BBC, you know. When the BBC adopts the line of the government on vaccines, for example, it's the same way in which Russia today adopts a pro-Russian line in their coverage. It's all the same mechanism. It's a bunch of friends. There's political links, social links, linking these government and media constantly everywhere, and family links sometimes. And it leads to a convergence of discourse and a convergence of interest. Why would we point to this in Russia, in China, but not on ourselves? If anything, this label is more important in America and in England. Eating meat is the norm almost everywhere. there's so many people presenting. They will always bring up India when it comes to vegans. They will say, the Indians are vegans. Well, I'm happy that they made this graph because we finally get to know 95% of people in South Korea eat meat, 91% Italy, 87% United States, India 53%. India is still a majority non-vegan country. It keeps being brought up by the leftists and the vegans. The Twitter platform lifts restrictions on the accounts of the Russian authorities, the accounts of the Kremlin, the Ministry of Defense, the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, and other ministries began to appear again in recommendations and searches. And here we have an AI-generated Elon, proud member of the Russian army. Isn't that beautiful? Oh my God, AI is getting funny. AI is getting funny. I'm totally for it. I'm happy that he has done this because there is no reason to keep this double standard. The only reason was that the leftist imperialists who had taken over Twitter, they were anti-Russian. That's it. Before meeting with Elon Musk, top advertisers privately debate his racist rhetoric. So Elon is headed toward, on April 18, at a conference called Possible from MME Global, the premier digital marketing association. And it seems that he's going there, you know, in the pool of sharks, because people have started punching at him, and it's like it's happening in about 9 days. It's happening in 9 days from now, and there are already big guys, top advertisers, including McDonald's and Colgate, are concerned that Musk's comments about race and the platform's openness to racist speech have rendered Twitter toxic. I think he will not be welcome there, but I think he's going there with a kind of bravado, with the idea of, hey, I'm going to stand for my ideas, and you know, I'm going to show the advertising business that you can be rewarded for standing for free speech. What they say is racist remarks. Is the fact that he has complained against the canceling of Scott Adams. That is a racist remark, apparently, at this point, to say, hey, isn't it ridiculous that we're canceling an artist? Oh, that is racist. Fractal Man sends a super chat. He says, Jeff, bet you don't have the guts to answer this question. What is your favorite color? Scared? All right, we have now come back from our break, and I have discovered a new completion to my theory of the extroverted to gay pipeline. You know, my theory that I laid out a couple of months ago was, but because I had, it was based on a single observation that my friend when I was in high school, I believe, you know, started showing extroversion, extreme fabulousness, and dancing and being feminine. A guy was being extremely feminine, extremely extroverted, started singing in the halls of the school, la 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 la, and then became gay. And like he was extroverted for 2 years before being fully gay. And I developed a theory that you begin by being extroverted. It's a gene for feminine extroversion. And the gene eventually leads you to dick sucking. Now, I've completed my theory with this observation of Dylan Mulvaney. This is an interesting early video of Dylan Mulvaney, where he mocks college cheerleaders from before 365 days of being a girl. So back then he was identifying as a male. But look at this. This is an era in which apparently he was a male comedian, and now he was laughing back then at a cheerleader woman.
No plans of leaving anytime soon. Y'all want to see some sense? I swear, it's just a sprain. Monica, I'm gonna walk it off. Does it look bad? Be honest. Go Bulldogs.
So what can we conclude here? I believe that Dylan Mulvaney was extroverted before being gay. I believe that Dylan Mulvaney was gay before being trans for fun. And I believe that Dylan Mulvaney was trans for fun before being trans for real. And so I declare it here, the extroverted to gay, gay to trans for fun to trans for real pipeline. We have it in full laid out right in front of us here. Social media face filters versus AI face filters. So apparently, AI face filters to improve women have shown up on the market. That is the face of a woman that's been improved.
Today I learned that this new viral beauty filter was created using machine learning. Unlike traditional beauty filters that use an augmented 3D face mesh that is overlaid on top of your face, filters like Bold Glamour, Teenage Look, uses a machine learning tech called GAN, meaning every pixel on your face is regenerated and then outputted after referencing another data set of images, which is why the filter looks so realistic. That is all. This is Zengsta, over and out. Today I learned that this new viral...
Quite shocking changes. Nothing is real anymore. Very sad. This was the article I was referring to earlier. Justice Clarence Thomas, mega donor, friend, collects Hitler memorabilia. I'm just laughing at this because it's irrelevant. It's like, you're doing the whole Nazi thing. They tried pulling the whole rapist thing back in the days when Clarence Thomas was given his justice seat. And now they're trying to pull the Nazi stuff. And it's like, you're always doing this, bro. You're always doing this, dear leftist. It's painful. You are making us hate you even more. And Clarence Thomas will just be like, okay, it seems I'm not shitting strong enough on the leftists yet. I'm going to do it even more. CDC partners with Social and Behavior Change Initiative to silence vaccine hesitancy. So they were following these people on social media that, you know, They had social media accounts, and it seems they still have it, where they were showing, oh, this tweet, I need help reporting this tweet. Oh, this fake doctor does this and that. And this is all CDC partnered, government funded. It's a bunch of state funded interventions on speech. That is a very interesting view on climate change. Published by Konstantin Kissin. Climate change will kill us all. Let's dismantle our socioeconomic system to prevent it. And then someone says, how about nuclear power? He says, I don't want nuclear power. I want to dismantle our socioeconomic system. That is exactly the situation right now. It's like, I'm super concerned about the Earth, and I would like to do everything I can to protect the Earth, protect nature. I farm my own food at times, and I believe that I'm leading a very efficient lifestyle, and I wouldn't want my garden to be impossible to run or something like this, and I wouldn't want the future planet to be inhospitable to my descendants. But every time we talk about climate change, there's always the elephant in the room. You want to restrict my land. You want to restrict my ability to transport. You want to restrict my freedom of movement. How about we engage on what we can do without hurting my liberties? Greg Abbott says, I am working, and that would be nuclear power. Greg Abbott is working on freeing through pardon Sergeant Perry. Texas has one of the strongest 10-year ground laws of self-defense that cannot be nullified by a jury or a progressive district attorney. Unlike the president or some other states, the Texas Constitution limits the governor's pardon authority to only act on a recommendation by the Board of Pardons and Paroles. So basically, he wrote to the board. The board has to request a pardon before he can give it. I didn't know that. That's a weakness of Texas, because in other states, the governor can arbitrarily decide. In Texas, he has to wait for a recommendation. But hopefully, so this is the case, if I understand correctly, Sergeant Perry is this guy who got, who was found guilty of murdering a BLM protester in Austin. But the BLM protester had a loaded AK-47 pointing toward him while he was getting attacked by a mob. So it's a Kyle Rittenhouse textbook case, and even more clear. Because with Kyle Rittenhouse, there was still the, well, they didn't have an AK-47. But in this case, they had an AK-47 pointed to his face. This guy was a fraction of a second away from death. And he succeeded at shooting the guy with the AK-47 without dying. It's a miracle in many ways. Hopefully, Greg Abbott will succeed at getting the board to send their letter of recommendation. And he says, as soon as the board send their letter of recommendation, I'm pardoning this guy. Thank God we have these side mechanisms, because America is going insane. And at this point, we need arbitrary power to counter the stupidity of people. Will Hunting says, you wasted $150,000 on an education you could have got for only $1.50 in late fees at the public library. Definitely in my top five films of all time, and even better because of the backstory, rewatching on Easter after several years. When I was young, Good Will Hunting is a movie that I really liked. I don't know. I would have to rewatch it, I guess. I would have to rewatch it. I've not watched it with my modern eyes very much. I don't know what I would think of it. Was there some leftism? The thing with these movies, with Matt Damon in these years, they had something special about them. They had this lingering feeling of unease and life is shit kind of stuff. A Fractal Man says, it is a bit cheesy. Yeah, I suspect I would find it cheesy nowadays. But when I was young, it was a fascinating movie for me. There was this series of movies with Ben Affleck and Matt Damon. They were all a little weird. Chasing Amy was pretty much in that vein. They all involved unease with female relationships, and it was very special in terms of movies, because in movies back in those days, everything was going good or everything was going bad. And these movies, they were kind of playing with your heart a little bit. What else do we have before we close the show? A U.S. deploys guided missile sub to Gulf region amid Iran tensions, heightened Russia presence. So heightened the conflict possibilities in the area. Biden is now strategizing for the next election. Biden will lean on an army of social media influencers, which may get their own briefing room at the White House to target young voters. The thing is, hopefully they will fail to do as much as they've been doing back in the days when Twitter was fully controlled by leftists. I think this plan will kind of be more like in the Barack Obama era rather than the Joe Biden era. Because what characterized the Barack Obama era was, oh yeah, we're doing social media stuff. But really, they were pioneering email lists and that kind of stuff. Whereas in the Joe Biden era, in 2020, they had control of social media in a way that allowed them to shut down their opponent, either subtly or not subtly at all. But this is over with Elon Musk in charge of Twitter, and I can't wait to see how it shakes out. I'm suspecting that what will happen is that they will try their propaganda drive, but it's going to affect only circle jerk communities of leftists and Democrats. And it's going to be hard to make it with lies on the Twitter platform, whereas it's been way too easy to get out with lies in the COVID era, you know, because anything that would challenge the mainstream narrative was banned. So the lies could stand as unquestioned. Over 100 more classified documents appear online, US secrets from Ukraine to Middle East to China. I haven't looked at these documents, but I'm always interested at following those leaks. I will have to consult them in more detail to see if there's anything relevant. Laura Loomer is dunking on a person that was attacking her. The person was saying, it's an honor to be attacked by the wacky far right. This one is particularly out there. Governor DeSantis will be a keynote speaker at our annual Courage Awards for Institute Cicero, where we will honor several legislators who each stood up to special interests for the common good. So there's starting to be this line in the sand between the DeSantis supporters here and Laura Loomer, who's presumably on the Trump side. So Laura Loomer answered to him, Joe, you funded a company called Ubiome to steal people's DNA from their poop. And the two founders fled the country for Germany. You're a front for foreign Chinese and Emirati interest, not an investor. Could you even get a security clearance? You bribed the Speaker McCarthy by employing his son Connor, and you're currently working with Kevin McCarthy to secretly sabotage Donald Trump ahead of 2024. Now, you all know why Marjorie Taylor Greene went crazy on me this week and had a meltdown on Twitter. McCarthy is playing for DeSantis via his son Connor. Bet you didn't think I knew that, huh? But I have eyes on you, Joe. What's the bribe for Governor DeSantis? It's all coming out in my story tomorrow, you predator. Stay tuned. I don't have a dog in this fight. I don't care much about this, but you have to give it to Laura Loomer. That is quite a dunk. Very interesting, this tension that is rising between the Trump supporters and the DeSantis supporter. I'm just like this guy in the tweet. I'm just, is it Monday yet? And I'm ready with my popcorn. Yeah, make it happen. You know, may the best candidate win. May the best candidate win. Los Angeles, California, alleged drug deal gone bad. Someone is filming from the top. And apparently there's a car, maybe this white car here, that was dealing with this black car. The black car tried stealing either money or drugs, tried to flee, but he gets shot. And they start filming after the first shot.
He's got shot.
And he gets shot many times more from a distance. And you can see he stops driving.
Yo.
He's dead, yo.
He's dead.
Oh, shit. He's dead, bro.
Yeah.
He's dead, bro, yo. Man, city life is not safe. Simply not safe. Concerns around money printing have been going on for at least 300 years in America. An excerpt of Ben Franklin's autobiography. About this time, there was a cry among the people for more paper money, only £15,000 being extant in the province, and that soon to be sunk. The wealthy inhabitants opposed any addition, being against all paper currency, from an apprehension that it would depreciate as it had done in New England, to the prejudice of all creditors. It's fascinating to see Ben Franklin basically making an argument for Bitcoin 300 years ago. Welcome to Natostan, formerly known as Europe. Yeah, this map, you know, is making you realize we are basically in the Common and Conquer game. And they've taken Europe as the ground. And in the Common and Conquer game, you are controlling the allies in Europe and you're advancing toward Russia. And that's what's happening. That's what's happening. Clearly, we have here a conflict of civilization. Stephen Robinson says, Jeff, did you see the video today of the crackhead woman on the streets of San Francisco giving birth? It's brutal. Sad face. A crackhead woman giving birth on the street? Send it to me, but I won't show it tonight. I'll have a look at it tonight, and I don't know if I want to show this on screen. That being said, you know, giving birth is a beautiful moment, and there's nothing to be disgusted by. And I, for one, I'm not against women, you know, controlling their birth in the moment that they feel. And you know, nature is such that you can give birth to a child on the street. I'm sorry, it's not dramatic. You don't need a doctor to give birth to a child. Now, you shouldn't have a baby if you're a crackhead. That is the issue I would take. But seriously, I don't take issue with woman giving birth on the street. I think it would be a beautiful future. What do we have here? Okay, an officer who punched a woman was found to have acted within his rights and has done nothing wrong. Let's have a look at the punch. Okay, so this punch was totally justified. Boom. Why? Because she's trying to give him HIV by biting. Look at this. She's going to try biting the arm. If she's already under cuffs or her arm's somewhat controlled and she's still trying to bite, you have no choice. You have to neutralize the threat. This could be a bodily injury that could be a total, that could mean death for you. I mean, what if she has HIV? No! And so people on Twitter were like, oh, can't believe he was found, he was found basically by his deontological investigation that it was okay to do this. And it is okay. I'm sorry, you can't bite a policeman. We can't risk the health. You're going to work. You're not going to expose yourself to viruses and potential death. You should be entitled to maximal protection against the dangers of your workplace, right? Well, the dangers of the workplace of a policeman is the people getting arrested. G7 nations to emphasize the importance of nuclear power in upcoming announcement. Well, thank God, let's do it. You know, I'm super excited, but it's been taking a while. France has already been fully converting to nuclear, almost. Main source of power being nuclear in France. Why don't we have this? And finally, last news item before we close the show. Predictions about the decline of Christianity in America may be premature. Both Christian symbols are bookends to the Easter story. One symbolizes the tragic execution of Jesus, while the other represents the Christian belief in his resurrection and the claim that death does not have the final word on him or his followers. For years, church leaders and commentators have warned that Christianity is dying in America. They say the American church is poised to follow the path of churches in Western Europe. Yet when CNN asked some of the nation's top religion scholars and historians recently about the future of Christianity in the U.S., they had a different message. They said the American church is poised to find a new life for one major reason. Waves of Christians are migrating to the U.S. Of course, we're talking about South America. I have no doubt that the number of Christians will be found to stabilize and increase eventually in America. But the Christians that are coming to replace us are not the same Christians that used to populate this country. And that is a big problem if you're to interpret Christianity as a thing. Because Christianity for an English mind is not Christianity for a South American mind. So you're going to have Christianity by denomination, by label. You're going to have people answering surveys saying they're Christians. But you're not going to have the same mentality that has led to the political structure of America as it stood before today. Ragnarantoni says, Scott Adams had a TRP moment today at around 4 on Coffee with Scott Adams. Okay, I'll go check it out. That is it for tonight, boys. Thank you so much for being with me. Do we have anything on schedule? I've resolved my debate yesterday. And so I have stuff to do IRL this week. I might take 1 or 2 days of break. I don't know when it will be, but don't worry if I announce that maybe on the 11th, 12th. And by the way, on the 12th, it's going to be my birthday. So my birthday in 3 days from now, that will be Wednesday. Other than this, we have nothing on the show. I've been invited at the Missing Link podcast. That will be on April 27th. And yeah, so I'll take 2 days of break or 1 day of break this week to get some red tape, paper resolved, tax-related stuff, and just clean out what I have to do in this domain. And other than this, we're going to be chilling on solo shows all week. Bye-bye. Thank you.